all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information. Good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wiscommon Sense for a Friday morning. It's February 10th, 2023. From near as I can tell, it's another beautiful day on Lake Wissota, and it's a better day here on University Avenue in Madison, where I am for one more day after about 6 inches of really wet, heavy snow fell. But the roads are mostly good again, and hopefully folks were able to dig out without too much trouble. Coming up this morning, did you have a space on your Wisconsin legislature bingo card for proposing a poll tax? Well, fill it in, because two Republican lawmakers are introducing the latest measure designed to restrict voting rights. Also, Congressman Mark Buchan talks about accompanying President Biden on Air Force One during Wednesday's trip to Wisconsin. Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil helps us review some of the ideas in Biden's State of the Union address that didn't get as much attention, but nevertheless are still noteworthy for their potential benefit to Wisconsin. So we want to talk more about that. What else have I got here? Oh, Democratic strategist Joe Zepecki about the benefits to Wisconsin from Biden's proposals as well. Dan Schumacher will have a weekend sports preview, and the Civic Media Homeroom, the weekend shows and other news that's coming up from the Civic Media radio family. Got to get my window fixed there so I can see one Aaron Zommers. Hey, such a busy Friday we have planned for you. And honestly, it might be Monday before we review yesterday's opening hearing for that new House subcommittee that is basically a remake of McCarthyism. But instead of, you know, Joe McCarthy, it's now Kevin McCarthy. So I don't know if it's not son of McCarthy, McCarthyism part two, Electric Boogaloo. What do you think, Aaron? Maybe two... No,
I think dated. I think I'm on. I don't know. I think Electric Boogaloo still works.
Ron Johnson, of course, was one of the first to testify. It was the hearing was just a drinking game of cliches and conspiracies and ridiculousness devoid of any factual information. And I think we'll get into it more on Monday and try to project whether this group is going to do some real damage, or if it's going to simply shoot itself in the foot on a regular basis, as the Democrats on the committee point out that the things they're claiming aren't true or aren't significant. If you want to reach the show, 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. You just heard Aaron Zommers there accompanying me here in Madison today. One more pitch for the Up North News question of the week. Your uniquely Wisconsin love story. Could be how you met, how you got engaged, where you tied the knot. The favorite place where you and your sweetie go, which could be a pontoon on Lake Wissota. Whatever floats your boat, no pun intended. You can head over to Up North News, look for one of the posts about your favorite Wisconsin Valentine story, and share that in the comments, and might make for a good little roundup story that we would do on Tuesday. Your reminder that in-person absentee voting is still going on for the February 21st primary. And that leads us into telling you that Monday is going to be a very busy show as well. We are going to have interviews with both state Supreme Court candidates on the progressive side of the ledger. On Monday at 6:15, Judge Everett Mitchell from Dane County. And at 7:15, Judge Janet Protasiewicz of Milwaukee County. So again, on Monday morning, Judge Mitchell at 6:15, Judge Protasiewicz at 7:15. And if you miss the shows, remember, you can always catch what we do as a podcast. We post it as a podcast almost immediately after the show. Go to the Up North News, or no, go to the civicmedia.us page. And that's where you'll find our shows, and you can listen back to those. Also, we will have Motherhood Mondays coming up at 7:30 on Monday with Kate Duffy and Nicole Slavin, and they're going to talk about the importance of the state Supreme Court race. So be listening for all of that. Let's see. I wanted to pass along that for only the third time, a Wisconsin Badger alum has been chosen for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And so we want to, again, offer a hearty congratulations to former Badger Joe Thomas, a first ballot Hall of Famer, becoming only the seventh modern era offensive tackle in NFL history to be inducted during his first year of eligibility. After his time with the Badgers, he went to the Cleveland Browns, where he played for 11 seasons, made the Pro Bowl for the first 10 of those before injuries set in. But again, he is a perennial Pro Bowler. He'll be inducted in early August. And I wanted to make note as well, yeah, only the third former Badger, Crazy Legs Hirsch, was the one, and now I don't have the other in front of me here, but again, only the third time. All right, the Milwaukee Bucks are on a tear here, now a 9-game winning streak as they hold off the LA Lakers 115-106. Let's see, LeBron James was not there. I will say I wanted to try to watch the very beginning of the game before, you know, calling it a night for a West Coast game, but they got off to kind of a late start because while LeBron sat out the game with, I think it was ankle soreness or something. Yeah, ankle soreness. So he was in a suit instead, but they did a little ceremony once again for him breaking the record, the all-time record for points scored in the NBA. And he gave a very lengthy speech at the center court, which, you know, like a lot of athletes, it had a little bit of, you know, hi, mom, and thanks to these folks. But otherwise, there was also a lot of what you would call more me now. So after the LeBron show, we got to see part of the game, and then the Bucks went on to get that win, and they will stay in L.A. and play the L.A. Clippers tonight. All right, coming up next, Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. We talked to him earlier out in L.A. about the State of the Union and other news after this. That's just a little pre-Valentine's Day dedication to an old dance partner of mine from the Trader and Trapper 3-for-1 dance floor in Eau Claire. And I hope everybody has a romantical Valentine's weekend. I was, by the way, I did have the fleece vest. I was going to go with the Mike Gallagher look again today. But I got to tell you, this is a radio studio, a lot of equipment, gets real hot real fast. I could not commit to the bit for those of you watching on Facebook video. Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil joining us from Los Angeles. Kia, hello. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Pat.
We have talked about some of the big headlines in State of the Union. And since you gave it a full write-up for Courier Newsroom and therefore for Up North News and some of our other state news properties, we thought we'd get into the weeds of some of the other things that if you didn't sit through a 75-minute speech, and nobody blames you for not sitting through a 75-minute speech. Kia and I get paid to do that. But Kia wrote up some of the things that maybe haven't gotten attention since that time. But I'll start, Kia, with a theme. And the president said it again the morning after when he came to Madison, Wisconsin, where he said, quote, "For the first time in a long time, we're building the economy from the bottom up and the middle out with products made in America with union labor." And of course, he said it at a labor training center in DeForest, just outside of Madison. But this is a speech and this is a plan that is perhaps more blue collar than a Democratic president's plan in some time, I would hazard a guess.
Yeah, I would argue since at least Jimmy Carter, if not LBJ. You know, Biden delivered a pretty strong speech, you know, focusing on stuff he's accomplished, you know, the infrastructure law, 12 million new jobs, 800,000 manufacturing jobs, you know, investments in manufacturing. And the rhetoric he used was incredibly smart. You know, he's talked about it before, but he wants to, you know, help those communities that have been forgotten in the Rust Belt, in the Midwest, that have been left behind, kind of. He wants to help rebuild them. And that's really was the framing of his speech last night, talking about bringing back good paying jobs, sort of rebuilding the manufacturing sector after, you know, NAFTA and all the offshoring of jobs and globalization. And those are things that Democrats, you know, like Bill Clinton supported. So Biden is separating himself from that era of, you know, Democratic economic policy and pushing a very, you know, blue collar working class agenda. And they've made some achievements already, and, you know, there's more he wants to do. And, you know, one of the things you mentioned that haven't gotten as much attention are his administration's efforts on what's called, what they're calling junk fees. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a couple of weeks back, they introduced a proposal to slash the late fees you get charged with if you miss a credit card payment. Those right now can run between $30 and $41, depending on how many payments you've missed. They want to cut it to $8 a payment. So no matter how many times you miss a payment, you get charged an extra $8 instead of $41. For a working class family that lives paycheck to paycheck, that's a huge deal. You know, I grew up with my dad had to, you know, balance his checkbook, basically. And so that's going to make a huge deal for families. And then they're also trying to tackle airline fees, overdraft fees. These things, you know, when you buy a ticket to go to a Beyonce concert, Ticketmaster upcharges you some crazy amount. They want to get rid of that. And that's, I think, incredibly popular.
It's those little things that, again, whether you're a blue collar family, you feel like there's a president who's actually looking at the day to day things that give you a hit in the pocketbook. And maybe some folks think that that's too small ball for a State of the Union. Jonathan Martin is the senior political columnist with Politico, had a great tweet. He said, Biden is about one more line away from mandating free hotel lobby coffee with real milk and cream, from winning a 400 electoral vote landslide for reelection. And it's true. He almost called for, you know, free lobby coffee with real milk and cream. And yeah, that might have just put him over the top, because they're, again, seeing a guy who rode the train every day from Delaware, who was paying attention to what folks are going through on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I think we really overcomplicate politics. It can be really simple. You know, it's not always like this, but people hate, you know, they hate spam. They hate junk mail. They hate fees that they're not expecting when they book an airline trip. They hate when they can't, you know, pay a medical bill because it's extremely expensive and one they weren't expecting. They hate when their insulin costs $80 a month. You know, if you communicate through your actions and your policies and your rhetoric that you understand that and you want to solve that, that can be really effective. Is that going to be a panacea for 40 years of, you know, losing blue collar white voters? We'll see. But, you know, he's talking about it the right way. They're pushing the right policies after decades of policies that frankly were not helpful for those people.
And a lot of, again, folks who don't have, you know, big fancy jobs with corner offices have been subjected to non-compete clauses when, you know, it seems like such an overreach from parts of corporate America. And he, you and I have talked about that previously, that, again, it's something that this White House is paying attention to.
Yeah. I mean, by a lot of estimates, 30 million workers in this country are under non-compete agreements, which means that, you know, if they're a hairstylist or, you know, run their own, I don't know, work for an accounting firm, they can't leave those jobs to either start their own firm or work for a competing one if they're under a non-compete agreement for, let's say, a year. Sometimes that can be longer, sometimes it's shorter, sometimes there's very specific restrictions. So that's, you know, that's not quote unquote the free market that Republicans and conservatives and a lot of people on Wall Street support. That's extremely restrictive. That takes away people's economic freedom. And the Biden administration is trying to end those non-competes, and the worst people in the world are trying to prevent that from happening.
And then there was, after that, all that talk about, you know, unity and building things, we got to be reminded again of the dark days when Sarah Huckabee Sanders was behind a podium. And you put up a quote from her where she said, I'm the first woman to lead my state. Biden is the first man to surrender his presidency to a woke mob that can't tell you what a woman is. Every day we're told we must partake in their rituals, salute their flags, and worship their false idols. It's crazy and it's wrong. What does that say about what the Republican Party has learned from the 2022 midterms?
It says they've learned nothing. It says they are so obsessed with litigating these bizarre, like super online conflicts that appeal to a fringe minority of voters that they have lost all sense of what it takes to win competitive elections in states like Wisconsin or Pennsylvania or Arizona, where the vast majority of voters don't know what Sarah Huckabee Sanders is talking about. I live in Los Angeles, one of the most ostensibly liberal cities in the country. I have not met one person who talks about any of those things she's talking about. Sure, somewhere in the United States, there's maybe a college freshman who's using some of that rhetoric, or some activists who talk like that. But it is not a common thing. And they talk, Republicans talk about it more than any Democrat or progressive activist I've ever interviewed or encountered. It is, they have become obsessed with this idea that Democrats are beyond woke and advancing all these things that Joe Biden has never once talked about. Chuck Schumer has never talked about. Hakeem, like, it's just, it's nonsense. And it, you know, it's weird. And frankly, that's going to turn off a lot of swing voters, as we saw last year.
There are certainly a growing number of Americans, sadly, that are learning about the dangerous fentanyl and the problems that have come in from China, from Mexico, that are homegrown as well. The president listed that along with, you know, immigration reform on a bipartisan basis as things that need to be fixed, serious problems that need to be addressed. And not only did Republicans not stand and applaud for his call for bipartisan action on these important things, you know, some of them again engaged in heckling. It doesn't give me a lot of faith that we're going to see substantive action to reduce the scourge of fentanyl across the country.
No, and you know, frankly, it's grim, but immigration has become their new wedge issue. What abortion was for decades is now immigration for them, you know, and they don't have an interest in really solving it. They want to play politics with it. They want to, people like Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott want to bus migrants and, you know, build a border wall and all this performative stuff that riles up their base, but actually accomplishes absolutely nothing in terms of solving the very real problems that exist in our immigration system. You know, there are proposals out there that would solve some of the problems, would at least be, you know, some progress. And a broad scope of Americans want, you know, Dreamers to be given a pathway to citizenship, and Congress has been unable to do it for almost a decade. And frankly, that's, you know, Republicans don't want to solve this. They want to use it as a political issue and to create outrage and to just keep that cycle going.
And as we talk about the issues that, you know, at least got mentioned, but not a lot of time, you know, believe it or not, one of those was assault weapons, because he knew there was no reason to spend a lot of time on it, because he's talking to people who, for the love of God, this week had lapel pins that looked like assault weapons at a time of immense school shootings and everything. But I mean, at least he reminded them of some factual information about assault weapons and what you can do safely about them.
Yeah, I mean, we had an assault weapons ban on the books for, I believe it was a decade, and then it expired, and lo and behold, mass shootings with assault weapons surged. And yeah, the lapel pin is just sort of the natural, you know, continuation of the Christmas cards with a whole family of people, including Congressman Thomas Massey with their guns, and Lauren Boebert showing off her gun, and J.D. Vance aiming his assault weapon in the air because of a spy balloon that's he's not going to ever be able to shoot. It is, look, the Second Amendment exists. It makes sense that a lot of people want to hang on to their guns for hunting, for self-defense. That's all well and good. But, you know, when a whole party seems to be glorifying weapons of war, there's no reason you need an assault weapon to go hunting or to protect your family. You know, these are weapons of war, and they have glorified them to such an extent that they do not care that people are dying every single day as a result of them. That's seemingly a joke to them. So Biden calling for an assault weapons ban is logical, it's common sense, and it's not going to pass because of where we are right now.
I think that's where we need to end, because otherwise we just know we're going to say this every week. It's logical, it's common sense, and it's not going to pass. And such is the era we have, but at least they heard about it directly from the president in one address this year before the rest of their reality show goes on. Kia Vakil, thank you so much. Always appreciate the update. Have a great weekend.
You too. Absolutely, Pat.
So let's do a little dose of Wisconsin sense on the back end of that. There is a sweet spot when it comes to tuning your own horn. On the one end of the self-promotion spectrum is flat-out narcissism and an inability to never not talk about yourself, you know, Donald Trump. At the other end is an ineffectiveness of, well, to borrow a biblical phrase, hiding your lamp under a bushel basket. For Democrats, it's best summed up in a political axiom that Trygve Olson of the Lincoln Project mentioned this week on Todd Alba's radio show. While Democrats are trying to create policy, Republicans are creating narratives. They weave a story, often inaccurate, sometimes a straight-up fabrication, but if you push the narrative enough, some people start to believe it, like all the polls that show how many Americans think Republicans would be better on the economy, even though they have no economic plan. And when they have been trusted with the economy, they plow it into the ground. More about that later in the show, but first we're going to take a break, come back and hear more from Congressman Mark Pocan about riding with President Biden out to Wisconsin this week. We're joined now by Congressman Mark Pocan. Congressman, how are you?
Hey, very good, Pat. Glad to be here.
Well, glad to have you here. Now, when you flew with the president on Air Force One, first off, let's do the journey, and then we'll do the visit. How far in advance do you hear about something like that?
I think we first heard about it on Friday, but honestly, I don't think we were confirmed on Air Force One until about 7 o'clock last night.
Wow. So you had a little time to pack a bag.
Little. Emphasis on little. But, you know, it's a pinch-worthy experience. You know, here you are on Air Force One. You're sitting with a bunch of the president's staff, and I'm sitting next to President Terry O'Sullivan, the head of LIUNA, International Union. President comes out, and you talk for 15 minutes, and some about the speech, some about policy, and then somehow we got to me growing up in Kenosha and American Motors, and we got talking about 60s cars. It was an interesting flight, but, you know, I have to admit, I mean, you know, it's one of those things you'll probably never forget, right, when you do a trip like that, and have the opportunity to have the president come to your district after something as important as the State of the Union. It shows how important Wisconsin is. The fact that he came to a labor hall, especially for me as someone who is a strong advocate for labor issues and for workers, it was extra special.
What do you think it is the significance that so far his economic plan and his message has been so much more inclusive of, you know, blue collar jobs, as well as we always talk about the tech economy? And look, Madison is a hub of the tech economy, and you know, there are institutes of higher learning here, but there's also a lot of things that have to be built. So what does that say about what this administration is planning for its economic blueprint?
Yeah, I'll tell you, more than I think any president that I've known, and this I guess is the third president, but you know, at that level, He is grounded with where real people are, right? You know, Barack Obama, I love many things about him, amazing orator, you know, a once in a century individual, but he surrounded himself with people from Ivy League colleges and thought that that was the way to govern. You know, Donald Trump, well, we'll leave it at that.
Good call.
But with Joe Biden, you know, what was interesting is, you know, he's very inclusive and very focused on things like manufacturing jobs. Because as we know in Wisconsin, not everyone is going to go take a tech job or do some of these other things. Not everyone goes to college, but everyone wants a good family supporting wage. And you can do that with a lot of different manufacturing and blue collar jobs. And, you know, our infrastructure was desperately needing an investment of money. And that finally happened after four presidents of both parties talked about it. Joe Biden got it done. But those are all good blue collar family supporting jobs. And he's really proud and loves to talk about that sort of thing. So I just think he's grounded with where real people are. He's not surrounded by a bunch of Harvard and Yale and Princeton eggheads. He's not surrounded by a bunch of people who just care about, you know, corporate donors to their party. He cares about real people because I think he's always been pretty connected as a politician.
Well, he sounds like a guy that, took the train every day and, you know, talked to real people for all those years when he was in the Senate. How are things from the laborers' point of view, labor overall, and then the laborers' union specifically, as you talk to the folks there? You know, what is their take on all this? Is there, you know, skepticism because, you know, politics is politics, or do they really have a positive outlook on where things are going between the infrastructure bill and the other things that have been in the Biden agenda so far?
So, you know, I had a lot of conversations, especially with the international president of LIUNA about this. Not only is the infrastructure bill, you know, clearly a number of trades are going to benefit quite well, people who work in the trades And for 5 or 10 years, this work is going to be out there because of the bills we did last session. But the CHIPS Act, you know, even though the idea is to make chips here again, so clearly there's going to be manufacturing jobs around that, the construction jobs alone to build the facilities so we can build these in the U.S. is $50 billion worth of construction dollars that are going to be construction jobs right now. And then the rest of the jobs will be there for the future. So there's a lot to be very, you know, optimistic around on the jobs front. Clearly coming out of COVID, that was where the president, the White House's focus, as Democrats' focus was. And, you know, I think we've greatly succeeded in that area.
I'm going to, this is the best I can do for a curveball, looking at this legislative session, because I get that the easy answer to this question is going to be zero. But you heard the president make the pitch that let's do a little bit more together on this, that, or the other thing. Do you think there is anything that, you know, a year and a half from now, you say, surprisingly, we got this bipartisan thing done? Or are we really thinking zero based on the divide in Congress these days?
So you have to do a budget bill, right? So that's above zero.
There you go. Okay. But we've already taken the over. All right. Good job.
I don't know how much more I've got for you, Pat. The problem is, Kevin McCarthy's not in charge of his caucus. You know, every member is essentially the speaker in waiting, because that's all it takes is one member to oust him from his spot. And because of that, you know, we saw it last night. We've seen it since this first month with them in charge. He's not in control of anything. And there are too many. You know, we thought the Adams family was funny as kids because you had Morticia and Uncle Fester and Cousin It. You know, they look like Main Street Wisconsin normal compared to this Republican caucus. And that's the problem, is there, it's going to be hard for them to find a lot of consensus.
Look, you've been there long enough. You know enough Republicans. You don't have to agree on things. You learned that in the legislature as well. I have to believe, even though obviously nobody's going to name names, I have to think you know one or two folks on the Republican side of the aisle that saw some of that conduct on Tuesday night. And if they didn't roll their eyes right at you, you could sense they were doing it on the inside.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I am spoiled in Congress because I serve on appropriations. And for the most part, the vast majority of Republicans on that committee are traditional Republicans like you and I used to serve with, who you can disagree with, but you can do it without being disagreeable, and you still have to get something done at the end of the day. So I don't have to go and watch Marjorie Taylor Greene say that $5 billion went to one elementary school in Illinois for COVID, when clearly it takes fourth grade math level to understand that wasn't correct, and she doesn't really comprehend that. I don't have to deal with Matt Gaetz and his slimy, you know, actions that he does. I don't have to deal with Lauren Boebert, you know, hugging a gun publicly every chance she gets. I don't have to deal with those characters. So I deal with people who actually we have to pass a budget. So one bill we have to get done. So I guess I'm kind of relevant no matter what, which is nice. But two, my day-to-day existence is significantly better than most.
It really is. It seems like every time we talk, I hearken back to your days in the legislature, but we always say as well that, you know, when you're on the Joint Finance Committee, there's only one bill that has to pass, the yep. state budget bill. And so that's where a lot of the work gets done. So now you're in the center of all that work as well. I wanted to ask about, you know, Senator Tammy Baldwin has been getting, you know, attention for the Made in America initiatives, the Buy American initiatives, and the infrastructure bill. Obviously, that's a priority for you and everybody else as well. That's something that has been talked about for years. For that to now be a part of the infrastructure of the infrastructure bill, that this is what we're going to have. Is there substantial significance to Wisconsin in that kind of language being inserted?
Absolutely. So, you know, the first person to stand up and applaud that was Tammy Baldwin, that line last night I watched, because I was trying to watch people like Kyrsten Sinema to see if she stood with more with us or Republicans and a few other things. Tammy was the first person, and she's been outspoken on this and done a great job across the state on this initiative. You know, down in Beloit, now I lost Beloit in the redistricting, but there's a company, Fairbanks Morse, United Steelworker workers, probably about 500,000 employees, depending. They make big engines for ships. And what's really important is, you know, the there was an order from presidents to build things in America. Cause you know, I don't know if you want foreign technologies in a submarine, right. Or things that could be a problem. But the Coast Guard in particular, and some of the other Defense Department agencies didn't always do that. They'd buy things outside. This president's been very clear. And Tammy Baldwin has been very clear in helping, I think, to get this message to that level that, you know, we benefit the most when American workers are making things. And also for other reasons, from national security to a whole lot of other aspects, that just makes sense. So, again, Joe Biden is really focused on jobs. He gets that, would love to have things made back here again, doesn't want us reliant on foreign countries from everything from oil to computer chips. And that's why you're seeing, I think, the initiatives that are being introduced with that lens.
And let's get to focus on your own, you know, priorities and values of all the things that you heard in the State of the Union and all the things that have gotten done over the past couple of years. Where were your biggest applause lines, and what things would you like to see accomplished yet, if possible, in the budget bill, if no place else?
Well, I really did love him highlighting all the bills we did last session, because I don't think people really realize we did four major bills that will affect every single family. And any one session, one of those bills would have been the biggest thing we did. We did four of them. So I was glad he did that. For me, the biggest disappointment has always been that we didn't address childcare. It was part of his agenda, the Build Back Better agenda, trying to cap it at 7% of people's incomes. You know, if you're a couple making $100,000 and you've got a three-year-old in daycare here in Madison, that's probably about $15,600 a year coming to pay for that. If you were capped at 7% of the president's proposal, you would save $8,600 a year. Plus, he had the child tax credit, don't forget, during COVID that he'd like to continue. That was another $3,600 or so. End of the day, $1,000 a month difference in your pocket as a family, so that you could go on a family vacation, you could put money aside for your child's education, you could be able to buy that camper or the snowmobile, or you know, the luxuries that we like to have in Wisconsin as a middle-class family. And that would have been a game changer for a lot of people. And we've been told by employers the number one thing barring people from going back to work has been childcare. So it was my biggest disappointment we didn't get it done. But what I love is the president still as committed as he was from day one on that. And it's not a question of if we get it done, it's just when.
Well, exactly, because we saw the difference that those things made when they were part of pandemic relief. Mm-hmm. Now they're going away because Republicans wouldn't go along with extending or renewing some of these things. So essentially, they become goals for the next time around, things that you'll be telling voters about in a couple of years, saying, if you put us back in charge, we can get those kids out of poverty again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, the child tax credit was one of the biggest ways to help get kids out of poverty. The other is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And quite honestly, that's a small amount of money in the grand scheme of things to help kids. But, you know, again, those values, what you get with Joe Biden is about as authentic as you can possibly get, I think, from a federal level politician. You know, I think he really does care. He's really putting that agenda forward. And I'll never forget the first time I was in the White House, we had about a 2.25-hour meeting in the Oval Office, 10 of us with him, about his Build Back Better agenda. And for the entire 2.25 hours, he answered every question himself, because it was his agenda. And as you know, often as elected officials, we have very superficial knowledge and our staff have the deep dive. One question he had to go to his staff and get more clarification and deeper dive on. I was extremely impressed because as much as I have many issues I care about, when it gets to details, I often have to turn to my staff who have the deeper dive on those subjects. And he really had an amazing grasp on things.
All in all, the experience between Air Force One and the speech, Is this probably the high point of the next 2 years, given what the road ahead looks like? And if so, can you revel in that? Can you live off that for a while?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, it was great for this year. I mean, it's going to be interesting. My attitude is, one, you know, I could still work on the budget. I could still have some relevant work to do, and we'll get things done, which is good. The second part is, I totally see us taking back the majority in the House in 2024, and I'm going to be very focused right here in Wisconsin on the Supreme Court race in April. You know, if we can have the deciding vote be someone who's independent and fair rather than one of these conservative knee-jerk votes that we've had. You know, we shouldn't have an 1849 law on abortion. We shouldn't have to worry about labor law provisions, you know, being struck down by a court. We shouldn't have to worry about a gerrymandered map that where your vote doesn't count, sometimes depending where you live, in the same way as other people. And it could be a significant change for Wisconsin. So I've got a lot to keep me busy between now and April. I'm going to be really busy focused on our majority in the House for 2024. And, you know, I think those things will pay off and then we can get that agenda the president's done.
Congressman Mark Pocan, thank you so much for your time. Glad it was a great experience and we appreciate the update.
Yeah, thank you, Pat. Of course, appreciate it.
You can turn it up. That's fine. This day in music history starts with something perfect for a Friday morning to get up and going. That, of course, would be the cover of the Kinks classic as done by Van Halen. This day in 1978. I did not think it was that long ago. 45 years ago. Van Halen released their self-titled debut album. You Really Got Me is the cover that was the breakout song from that one, and people saw this kid, Eddie Van Halen, who's no longer with us, but boy, there was a lot of talent there, wasn't there? All right, other end of the musical spectrum, happy birthday, 86th birthday to Roberta Flack, born this day in 1937. Strolling in the park, watching winter turn to spring. She had a couple of hits with Donny Hathaway. She was all over soft rock radio in the 70s. And again, 86 years old today. The actor Robert Wagner, 93 years old today. And I don't doubt if there was another Austin Powers movie that number two would be a part of that one as well. But of course, you can remember him from all kinds of TV shows and movie roles. Again, those of us of a certain age, he will always be Jonathan Hart in Heart to Heart, this very cheesy romantic detective comedy, you know, pre-moonlighting for TV in the late 70s. He and Stephanie Powers would be zipping down the highway together in their sports cars, making googly eyes at each other. Robert Wagner, 93 years old today. Also a birthday today for Greg Norman, the golfer, 78, who now runs what I refer to as the Al-Qaeda Golf League. You might call it the LIV Tour, sponsored by the Saudis. George Stephanopoulos is 63 years old today, showing that you can go from news to politics or politics to news, so long as you do a very good and fair job. And I just wanted to make note that as I typed out George Stephanopoulos' name, I only missed one letter.
Which is impressive.
That was, I impressed me. I made a note. I was going to take credit for that, for getting that almost right. Just missed the first U in there. I can spell Janet Protasiewicz, you know, every time now. Almost there with George Stephanopoulos. And actress Emma Roberts is 32 years old today. All right, we have one little soft rock thing from Roberta Flack. Let's go to the disco end of things. Rod Stewart hit number one on the singles chart this day in 1979. His Do You Think I'm Sexy was on the album Blondes Have More Fun, which also hit number one on this day in 1979. Now we'll move ourselves through the 80s into the 90s, 1990 to be exact, and it was on this day that the number one album came from Paula Abdul in a duet with MC Scat Cat. The Scat Cat character was actually Minnesota DJ Derek Delight Stevens, and it was a number one hit for 3 weeks. This one is rather bittersweet. It was on this day in 2008 at the Grammy Awards. The big winner was Amy Winehouse. 5 trophies, including Best New Artist, Record of the Year, and Song of the Year for this one. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, the snubbing, thumbing your nose at the idea of rehab turned out to be, I guess I would call it a self-fulfilling prophecy. Maybe other folks would say I'm being harsh about that, but while addiction is a disease, there is for some people a bit of an element of choice there that she went with and did not stay with us much longer after winning that Grammy, those Grammys on this day, 2008. One more, and boy, I mocked this song last time we played it, but there's a story now this week about Rebecca Black, whose viral video smash happened this day in 2011. Why is she in the news this week? Because the then 13-year-old, who's now 25, that song was half her life ago, but she has just released her debut album. So long after the internet fame, the ups and the downs and the bullying and everything else, she is now talking about the journey to adulthood, making music on her terms, and probably learning, like all of us, don't pay attention to the comment sections. Talks about her, you know, her life, the twists and turns it's made, the girlfriend that she has who has been supporting her, who did not really know that much about, the Friday song when it came out. So look for Rebecca Black's new album, Let It Burn, I think is the name of it, something like that. And yeah, You'll see that this weekend.
I know when I looked it up last time, I saw her YouTube channel and there was a lot of stuff on there like, who on earth decided it was a good idea to put 13-year-old me on the red carpet and stuff like that?
Yeah. So, yeah, one of the articles said, you know, one moment she'd be, just crushed, you know, reading comments about, you know, her not having talent and, you know, being ugly and blah, blah, blah. And then like an hour later, she'd, you know, a limousine would arrive and take her to, you know, the Nickelodeon Kids Choice Awards where she'd be, you know, everybody would be, you know, wining and dining her. So that's the thing with fame, man. Your 15 minutes could be really fun, or it could be a rough ride. And that 16-minute, that's a downer. Let's see. The 25th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified on this day in 1967. You know, we mentioned Donald Trump's impeachment trials. The second trial, the anniversary of that one, was yesterday, following the January 6th attack. And, you know, that second impeachment trial showed how behind the scenes Trump's own allies were considering invoking the 25th Amendment. It provides for the temporary transfer of the president's powers and duties to the vice president, either on the initiative of the president or the initiative of the vice president, along with a majority of the president's cabinet. And there were members of the cabinet who were talking seriously about Trump's state of mind and whether the 25th Amendment should be invoked. But in either case, you know, whether it's, the 25th Amendment or the Republicans in the U.S. Senate doing their job with either impeachment trial, the one where he was blackmailing Ukraine as it was trying to stave off a Russian invasion, or fomenting an armed insurrection and the overturning of an American election, either way, you can amend the Constitution. You can have the best processes in place for impeachment and, you know, a bar of burden of proof. But if you don't have people that are willing to break glass in case of emergency when there is an emergency, then all you really have are words on a piece of paper. And that's something we need to remember on this anniversary of the 25th Amendment being ratified. All right, coming up next hour, Joe Zepecki, Dan Schumacher, and are fringe Republicans from Wisconsin really thinking it's a good idea to introduce a bill that levies a poll tax now? More coming up. You're up north.